All right, teachers, it is time to talk about a gem of an episode for today's podcast. So you'll hear Jessica welcome back our curriculum writer, Pat, and together they introduce you to another member of our EB team, Jay. Now, Jay is fantastic at ensuring that what we create at EB has all of the support needed for every level of learner that you might have in your classroom. So Jay puts together adaptations for our materials that includes adaptations for English language learners. So it is very special to have him joining us on the podcast today. And he's going to just have this great conversation as you guys listen in with Jessica and Pat, all about creating effective and practical adaptations in your lessons to better support your students at every level. So this is just, again, one of those gem of an episode. Hope you love it. And if you do, please let us know over on Instagram so that we can hear from you and just your thoughts and ideas around just bringing new voices and perspectives to the podcast. All right, you guys, let's go ahead and tune in.
Hi there, Caitlin here. Our mission at EB Academics is simple. Help middle school ELA teachers take back their time outside of the classroom by providing them with engaging lessons, planning frameworks, and genuine support so that you can become the best version of yourself, both inside and outside of the classroom. So if you think you might be ready to try something new because you know you simply cannot continue the way that you have been, then I'd invite you to take a moment to check out the EB Teachers Club, the EB Writing Program, or the EB Grammar Program by visiting the links in the description of the podcast. We hope to continue to support you within one of our programs in the future. And in the meantime, we look forward to serving you right here on the podcast each week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Teaching Middle School ELA podcast. So Pat and I are back with you today, and we actually have a special guest. We have Jay Watson with us, and he is a team member on EB, and Pat and he actually used to work together. So I'm so excited to hear what you two have to say, but Jay is coming to talk to us all about what you need to know about effective adaptations for ELLs and students in special education. So welcome to the podcast, Jay. We are excited to have you here, and I'd love it if you just kind of give some background information about yourself.
Yes, thank you, Jessica, and good morning, Pat. It's great to see everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's very exciting. I've taught special education in the high school setting for 6 years, for the most part in resource room and co-taught settings, but I've also led general education courses. My first 4 years were teaching in Michigan, alongside Pat. For the last two of those years, we were co-teaching together. So we were able to connect for those 2 years, which was great. But a lot of those 4 years, first 4 years, were in the resource room and co-teaching. And then the last couple years, my wife and I moved to Chicago, where I took a job to do some co-teaching, but also ended up taking on the general education course to myself, just based off of teachers having to leave and move on to other jobs. So that was like a middle of the year type of thing, which was a lot of fun. It was an interesting transition to have to kind of like switch mid-year, but I really, really happy to have taken that on, because it was, I think it really helped. It really helped become, you know, kind of the teacher that continue to be today. Really get to try, just a lot of different things, mm-hmm. which has been great.
And now we are so lucky and happy to have you on the team creating our support lessons for our teachers. And I really think that's been a game changer. So if you're an EB Teachers Club member and you've noticed that our issues and our resources now include those support lesson plans, that's all Jay offering: the ideas, the tips, the tricks, the accommodations, like everything in there. So we hope you're utilizing those. So thank you, Jay, for your diligent work on all of that.
Yeah. And thank you, Pat, for looking me up.
Yeah. It worked out, huh?
Yeah, flattered. Yeah. It was great.
And well, we were like, anyone who Pat recommends, we're like, we know we're going to like him.
But when I heard that we were looking for someone in special education to help us with supports, that was my first thought was, everyone could have Jay as a co-teacher if
Right.
I asked him to come and write these supports. Because when I'm looking at all these support ideas, like our time in the classroom just comes back to me because I'm just thinking, these are all of the things that Jay would be doing while I was teaching that I would be forgetting to do. You know,
Okay, so
writing those
that.
ideas on the boards or helping with those small groups and those little things that you forget to do when you're in the middle of all of the action, you know?
Well, that makes me think, Pat, can you kind of explain the situation of what your classroom was like when you and Jay were co-teaching together, just so listeners have an idea of it?
Yeah, and I'll let Jay jump in too. It would totally depend on the day. But Jay and I would kind of, we would talk about what the week would look like and also what the day would look like. And then I would kind of come up and do like the quick mini lesson or whatever, you know, little bit of instruction the kids would need in the beginning. We tried to avoid like long lectures and things like that, but whatever little thing the students needed. Jay would jump in with whatever support I was missing, writing like if I was asking the students the question, he would write the question on the board. If students were giving responses, he would write their responses on the board. He would organize the information, you know, give the visuals so the students would have the visuals there and things like that. And then when we would do group work, he would oftentimes take a small group and work with them. They were not always the special ed students that he would take with him. He would take what he would call his students, which would be his caseload of students, but also any students who wanted help. And so I don't even think, I mean, obviously the students who were on his caseload knew that they were, but not everyone in the class even knew who was on his caseload because so many students got help from him that were not. Really, and I think that's important also to think about as people are listening to this podcast, is that the things that are helping your special ed students and that are helping your ELL students are also helping your general ed students. So all the supports that Jay was giving to the students in special education, they were helping the entire classroom. All of the kids were benefiting from the visual aids that he was giving them, the small group help that he was giving them, any ideas that he had for special handouts or graphic organizers and all of that stuff. It helps everybody. So even if you don't have anyone in your classroom who has special needs currently, I mean, listen anyway, because this will be very helpful.
Yeah. And I think that was I think the big thing that worked well with you and I, Pat, when we worked together, is yeah, we managed to find a flow pretty early on. And I think you definitely had your classroom established when I came in to co-teach. So you had your plans, you had the big picture set up, I think. And that allowed me to obviously see what you had, and we could work off of each other. And I think a lot of what I was able to do was just anticipate where you know, students might need that support, right? And I think that was huge between you and I. And the visuals are something that that's how I like to learn. So I think that's why I push it a lot. But students really grasp onto that type of things as well. I think we're going to get into a lot more of that that you just mentioned, certainly.
Yep. Yeah. So that being said, I mean, it sounded like you guys had a great dynamic in the classroom, and how cool for your students. But Jay, like, how did you come up with then the strategies that you used to assess these students? Like, how did you decide, okay, what accommodations are appropriate for each particular student?
Yeah, you take a lot of different approaches, and everyone certainly is different. I think you latch on to what you think as like who you are as an educator, and I guess you essentially establish your own routine of finding that, I guess that path. I'm a little jumbled right now, sorry. But really, I look at all facets, like how's their bell work? You know, what parts of the lesson are they engaging, you know, throughout the day? What portions are they grasping onto more effectively, and where are they struggling? And I think a lot of that, I was able to find success in how I was able to present purposeful prompts when it came to writing, being very intentional on the questions that's being asked, but also how I formatted assignments. I was lucky enough to be a co-teacher with another educator starting at our high school that I taught with Pat. And he had a really incredible set of vocabulary worksheets. And I think you can actually buy these just via Amazon. It's like a book called 1,000 SAT Vocabulary Words That You Need to Know. And essentially it was a worksheet that had like five new vocab words a day, and these were all, with high school, these were all these are words essentially that you would encounter on an SAT type text or something like that. So that you would the essential task was to you identify these words, you're breaking them down to their parts of speech, so nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs. How do those function? How do they, how do they relate to each other, contextually, their meanings, their definitions? And then you get to actually to see how they put in play, because you do some fill in the blanks with sentences. So the worksheets themselves were kind of multifaceted, and you're able to, just by kind of monitoring the room and working the room, where students were showing success. So Billy might have been really, really set on his parts of speech. He can identify nouns, verbs, adjectives without, without skipping a beat. He might not be so successful at finding out what these definitions of the words are contextually, because he didn't do so well in the fill-in. So you can kind of you use that as a kind of stepping off point, because those are all very, very necessary skills to have, and they really grow into the primary skills that we're trying to teach as language arts teachers. I think when you're able to establish like what skills you're really trying to focus on, you can really begin to make a huge difference, because that starts going into what's in your routine. I think the routine is what really has been a huge help. But as far as assessing students, I think that's really the big key for me, was having kind of multifaceted assignments, being personal about the questions you're asking, and seeing how they're responding outside of the traditional formats of, here's your quiz, how'd you do? And I think I remember, Pat, you mentioned the last episode I listened to, about not necessarily everything needs to go into the grade book and things like that. I totally agree, and what opportunities are there? I mean, or give those students any opportunity you possibly can to read or write something. And if it goes in, great. If not, then use it as an opportunity to see just how they're doing, as a check-in. I think that's still important to do.
Well, what I'm hearing you say too, it's like you need to know your students, right? You need to know your skills, and then you can build in the differentiation. And I think that's key. Yeah, you don't need to grade everything, but every single thing you're doing in class is a learning opportunity. So we need to give our students those experiences. So it sounds like you started to talk into this, like how you could differentiate the instruction, because it probably would be different depending on, each student. So if Pat, you mentioned this earlier, like you're teaching a lesson and you, Jay, are deciding, like, this is what I'm writing on the board, or these are the questions I'm coming up with to support this lesson. Are you doing that on the spot, or are you like reading through a text in advance, coming up with support questions? Like, how are you differentiating for students during a lesson?
Yeah, you're absolutely previewing the content before if you want the most success. That's my big belief. Because I've certainly done it where I haven't previewed, and
We all have, right? Been there.
it's like, it's so very important, because I mean, especially on things that you've read year after year, right? We've all read, I mean, Romeo and Juliet. Shoot, I can. I say I know that in the back of my hand, but then you read it for the fifth year in a row, and suddenly, like, wow, Benvolio said this in this scene, like, and this is just like opens this up. That's great. You're always going to find something new, right? And you should always have that idea of, you're almost learning along with them, because you're shooting to become an expert on the content. And that's a huge step. And you could even inform the students, like, yeah, guys, I was reading through this last night or the other day, and I formulated this question because of it. Not because I've had this in my bank for the past 10 years as a teacher. I think if you're able to showcase that you're growing with them, that's an academic rigor showing in a huge way. Like, wow,
For
Mr.
sure.
Watson, he's developing these ideas on seemingly with us, which is really huge.
Well, and I think it, in a way, it ties into what you're doing now for EB, right? Like you get to preview the content before it goes out to teachers, which is so cool. And that's how you're coming up with all your support ideas. So I would love if you can just share some of those ideas that you're adding on to the lessons. Like, are they question stems? Are they different ways to group students? Whatever that might be. So just any of the modifications you're making or accommodations to give teachers some ideas of what they can do for a lesson.
I will say in some cases, my job's kind of tough because the lessons themselves are already very, very detailed, and they offer a lot of supports themselves. I think that's, I mean, it's great. So initially, I kind of look at what supports are already there, so I don't often find myself, I guess, offering the same idea, I suppose. But when it comes to that, I'm always looking at how can we chunk whatever reading we're doing for that assignment. What's the most manageable type of piece we can chunk that into in order to in order to deliver that information to the students. I want to try my best to make sure that the whole text is being delivered, as much as possible. We want to try to keep the that grade level text as in focus as we can. So I think a lot of that just comes with just reminding, when I'm looking at these lessons, I'm looking at those opportunities of where can I remind whoever's doing this lesson, hey, like this is 4 pages of reading, or this is seven paragraphs. Think about stopping every 2 to 3 paragraphs, maybe bracket that, and just, what was going on right here, guys. And I think if you establish that into your routine, your students are going to latch on to that type of process very quickly. And I think that's an incredible way to unlock a text from a student viewpoint. And once that work's done in the forefront, you kind of, if you have to revert back to the text, those annotations are there waiting for you. And it's all very, well, I'm thinking about, I'm anticipating, where those problems might be, and you kind of you pay now so you can kind of play later. You do the for do the work up in the future. I think the I was just kind of looking through my notes here. Offering opportunities for students to participate, I think, is huge. So and giving them different ways to do so. So if it's, oftentimes it's, raise your hand and you can respond and discuss, but maybe students might be a little nervous, so give them a sticky note. They can write down the response and have them go slap it on the board. Now we're tactile, now we're getting a little bit more kinetic with how we're learning and stuff. I mean, these are 5th through 8th grade lessons through EB. So I think kids are going to really get, always get a kick out of that from a younger standpoint. I think when it comes to writing, what skills are we trying to measure? I'm really thinking about quality over quantity, especially when it comes to the amount of prompts we're giving them. If we're giving them 7 prompts and 2 of them are compare and contrast, if they can really showcase that first one, compare and contrast, and do it well, maybe they don't necessarily have to do the next one, and then we can focus on all the other skills that are being being looked at in that assignment.
Yeah. I love what you're saying here because I'm just thinking, like, whether it's an EB lesson or like a lesson from a textbook or whatever, I feel like so often, at least I did this as a teacher, I like follow what's there. If there were 4 questions, I gave 4 questions, and it's like this is almost encouraging, forcing you, whatever, to stop and say, you know what, do I need to do it that way just because that's what the lesson plan says? So I love that, Pat, you brought it up earlier, but it's like now everyone, if you're an EB Teachers Club member, you have like Jay on your side helping you, saying like try these things out or consider this, and the teacher doesn't have to use that brain power because they're already probably a little scattered in class, there's a lot going on, but now they can say, oh yeah, I could chunk these questions or I could eliminate this one. And I think it's just like it stops us and it causes us to refocus on like what's important in the lesson. So I just love those ideas that you were sharing, so thank you.
And it's never bad to have, too much, right? And you can always take things away a lot faster than you can develop them on the fly.
For
So
sure.
it goes back to, being intentional, having a good plan in place, which educators are always trying their best to think about what we could do, yesterday so tomorrow can be so much easier. Always going to be an uphill battle, but that's I think if you're thinking with that mindset, you're doing a great
For
in my
sure.
opinion.
Okay, so my next question was actually about how you collaborated with Pat, but we kind of spoke into that already. So, Pat, if you have some questions that you want to ask Jay, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I was just it's so funny because like when Jay's talking, I'm just like nodding vigorously as if everyone at home can see
Love
what I'm
it.
doing. But
I just
yes,
have been that over talking. That's something very nice.
my especially when you're talking about, when there's so many questions, yeah, it's okay to delete some questions and not. I was just telling Jessica, my son accidentally forgot his math homework the other day, and he had two, so he had two times the math homework. And it was such a slog last night going through so much math with him. And that's not the norm for us. But if that had been the norm, I mean, that would have just been, he never would learn math that way if that's how we did it every single night. And with some students, they will get so much more out of answering three questions really well than six questions, especially if some of those questions are really asking of, a similar skill of students. So,
Right.
you have permission, teachers, to delete some of those questions for students. And you'll have less to look at, and they'll have less to write, and everybody wins. So.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever. And yeah, whatever you take out, you can always. It's always in your back pocket. It doesn't necessarily go away. It's.
Yes. Use it later.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm sorry, Pat. I was just
Oh,
gonna
go ahead.
say I had a, as far as like. You and I working together and just co-teachers in general, I had a couple thoughts of and maybe this kind of goes without saying, but I think it's just really important to find an understanding of who you're working with and how they how they want to work the room. If you are the special ed teacher going into the room, I guess goes without saying, but really be that team player and really establish the flow. Have as much discussion as you possibly can, because I think that's where the ideas really, really spout. And especially when you're stressed out on a particular day, that's I think you really gotta, release that stress and rely on that other teacher. And just going back to having a plan, understanding roles. And I think you and I really trusted each other when the torch was passed. I think the idea is like, the students don't really know who's the lead. At least that's what I feel like worked for us. And that's that I think we saw a lot of success with that. So it was, I will go back into the class with you again any day there, Pat. That's for
Oh
sure.
yeah, for sure. If we weren't in
Aww.
the States. Yeah,
All right. Yeah.
if you're, I mean, not everyone's lucky enough to have a co-teacher, but if you can co-teach, I would just highly recommend it. And communication, whether you're co-teaching or not, is just it's just so key. Just a good community of teachers. Find your people for sure.
Yes, yes,
All
yes.
right.
Establish a community.
All right. So how do you suggest teachers scaffold instruction to help students access grade level content? So even though a lot of teachers, I think, jump to, my student is reading at a third grade level, but my student is in, say, seventh grade. How do you help them to access the grade level content and participate meaningfully in the classroom activities?
I think a lot of that just goes back to a little bit with previewing the text, and that's where you're better able to identify, if we're going to stick to a grade level text, we want to identify that chunk that we can really kind of take a close read at and break down, perhaps. I think that's a really good one, and establishing maybe some rest stops throughout your units where, you're looking at a grade level text, or the main text, I should say, and then you take a break and you look at something else that's related. I think that's also that's a good idea, because you'll be able to, kind of understand where you're, in a sense, assess where your students are at, with the main and how they perform on the rest stop, I should say. I mean, I think the frequent check-ins are huge, as much as you can possibly do with students. And I think that goes back with, like, you're establishing a personal relationship with them. You're really gonna see a lot more effectively how they're handling the grade level content, because they're gonna be honest with you whether or not they're getting it. And that's a lot easier to read than just kind of like the nonverbal cues. You want to really establish a comfortable setting. I can't help but push establishing a routine within your day. As much as the students can anticipate what's coming, I think that keeps them ready to go, and it keeps them not nervous about what's to come, I suppose. And it keeps them more involved and more one with the class. And I think that keeps them more engaged in a huge way. But I think isn't the more intentional you can be when you're previewing those texts, those tougher grade level texts, I think that's going to find the most success there, because that's where you're finding the important chunks or the vocab words that you're going to run into that students are going to, maybe fumble, they're going to fumble on, and you have to identify those. I think those are that's always been a huge stepping off point for me.
Yeah, and I know in our class we did a lot of if it was available, we would show them like little film clips if there was a film of the book, or we would listen to audio, let them listen to the audio, like we would do the read alouds in class, maybe let them listen to the audio version at home and do those kinds of things. What I really liked about your response is that the kids were still accessing grade level materials. It wasn't that
Yes.
one student was reading a fourth grade book while the rest of the class was reading the eighth grade book, that everyone was still reading the same books, but just kind of accessing them maybe in a slightly different way.
Yeah, and I think it's if you're, like we're you can read a whole act of Romeo and Juliet, and it is great. And I would love to do that, and I do. But I guess in a sense, you kind of got to be realistic, and you want to, if that's what you got to keep at the forefront, sure. So now we really got to break down, like, what are those important points that we want to hit? And how do we want to, I guess, how do we want to format that too when it comes to delivering it? So I always found a lot of success in how I formatted my assignments. It took me a few years actually until I got to Chicago when I worked with another teacher. But she did a really good job at taking a small bit of text and just essentially, put up a table. Here's the text on the left, and then it's just blank. It's either blank on the right, or here's a prompt, here's a vocab word, here's this. So you're working through the text. It's a kind of like a living document. And whether you're looking at four paragraphs of writing or one, it's a really effective way to break it down. And students, I think, kind of they're able to kind of more easily work with us. And that's one way. I found that formatting assignments and being very intentional at how what text you're choosing, if it's going, yeah, especially if you want to keep up the rigor. I think that's really important.
Awesome. How do you create a supportive and inclusive classroom environment for students while promoting their language development and their cultural proficiency? So this is more for the ELL student side.
Yeah, I think I mean, your classroom is an extension of you. It's really important to showcase who you are, but it's also, yeah, it's very important to understand. I think it's important to understand obviously the demographics of the school you're teaching in too, and latch on to that. I think when I first started teaching at the school you and I taught in Michigan, Pat, I was able to kind of put a print on the room that I was in. I don't know. I'm not sure if you were in my first class or not, but I had a couch in there and stuff. I wanted to make it really comfortable. I put up a bunch of like music posters, stuff like that, just to kind of showcase, I guess, who I am. But it was a comfortable learning environment, and I felt super awesome being in there, and I think the kids got that too. I think that's I think that's really important. Moving to Chicago, that's I've definitely had to think about my demographic a lot more specifically. And with that, I think I was able to kind of latch on to what the students were in tune with a little bit more, because they we were very much a lot we were a lot more different. Just just straight up, it was a lot more easy to see, but also it was very exciting to embrace those differences and things like that, and showcase that in the classroom as well. I think thinking about the small details of what you want your classroom to be set up, is just really important. Even down to the lighting. I don't think I ever used the ceiling lighting. If I had the choice not to, I found different ways to set that up. Because I don't know, I didn't like it, and I found my students didn't. It's just those little things that I think you develop over. Unfortunately, it could take some years, some trials and tribulations. But I guess that's the job. You figure out. It's a very, trial and error, I suppose, sometimes. And then you and I think, I think we established some team building measures in our classroom, like early on. What was it like? I think we had like a solo cup thing with rubber bands, and we had them like do stacks
Yeah, they
as
had
a
to stack the
classroom.
cups with rubber bands.
Oh, fun. Just to build that community and that trust. I love it.
Because I think it was senior, yeah, it was
It was
senior
seniors, yep.
students, the literature circles. So that was like a lot of work was on them.
A lot of group work and helping them feel comfortable working together and sharing.
Yes. So we found different opportunities just to kind of, we're not gonna read through a text necessarily. We're gonna just see how you guys work together. Establish some rapport. Let's get these kids kind of moving and stuff.
Yeah,
I think
because
that was
if they
really
can't,
okay.
sorry, I talked over you. I was gonna say if they can't just work together on a basic level, they're not gonna discuss high level texts together. If they can't talk about their day, they're not gonna talk about, poetry, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right. I think we have two more if we have time for it. How do you monitor the progress of students and adjust accommodations? Do we kind of already talk about this? Adjust the accommodations and instructional strategies based on individual growth and development. I feel like we kind of already touched on that a little bit. Did you have anything more to add on that?
I'm one teacher. I look at it one way, right? So I kind of go back to, I always think about outside of the traditional assessment techniques, right? But I can't help but stress the like any opportunity is a good opportunity to just to see how they're doing, and not stressing about putting everything in the grade book. But yeah, I'm always looking at those individual pieces, like going back to how Bellwork's doing, how they're doing throughout the day, and really establishing a personal relationship. And I'm I guess I'm a little nervous. I don't know if I'm necessarily answering this super correctly, but that's that's my one perspective of it outside of traditional realms of assessment.
Well, I think that's totally relatable for teachers. It's like you need to check in with your students. You're kind of going to be changing things as you go. And I think what you're sharing is super practical. So we appreciate your perspective.
Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate that.
If I could just add just one thing for ELL that I had just taken note of for myself for grading. Is that one thing that helped me a lot for ELL students is when I'm grading their papers, if oh it depends on their level of English proficiency, I'm having trouble speaking, is sticking to when you're grading grammar punctuation, sticking to one concept at a time when you're grading their papers. Because if you have a student who's really struggling with a lot of concepts and you hand it back and their paper is just full of red or purple or whatever color ink, it's so overwhelming that they can't zero in on there's so much to fix that nothing gets fixed. And so I'll tell them, I only sit this time we've been working on verb tense. I only marked verb tense on here. I didn't mark anything else. And then fix the verb tense. And then on the next essay, if your verb tense is great, we work on the next thing. Fixing one element at a time. We're going to work on one organizational component, one grammar component, whatever it is. I find really helps in terms of assessment for students who are learning English. And
Yes,
I
I
just,
yeah.
I was going to say to add on to that too, I like the focus on one thing, Pat. And then I'm thinking too, in terms of like academic discussions for ELLs, like how can we provide sentence stems, right? How can we provide a ton of opportunities for conversation, maybe at different levels? Like maybe some students need visuals to support them, or some students are ready for a more academic conversation. And so just like thinking about how can we provide the same content, but just adjust it a little bit depending on their needs. All right. Do you have
Yes,
one more question, Pat, or
I do.
was that
Yep.
everything? Okay.
Final one is, how do you involve students in their own learning process and encourage them to advocate for their academic needs and goals?
Ooh, I like this.
I mean, really, you want to ask those honest prompts, right? Like, how are you feeling about this text right now? Like, we're taking that break in the unit, and maybe that break is scale 1 to 10, where are we at? And you can kind of, you could choose to pivot or do anything from there. One-on-ones, I think, are super important. And especially when things are going well too, you just keep that established, because then it's just normal. You're doing your check-ins once every, one or 2 weeks or something like that. Because, can't, you know, we can just get so easily lost in everything else that we need to do. So going back to establishing things like that into your routine, and it's normal, I think you're gonna find, so much success with that, because your mindset is anticipation and where can I make that more positive next step. I think that's just super important.
Love it. So just to wrap things up, I feel like I have some key takeaways, Pat. I don't know if you want to share any as well, but for me, it's like know your students, know those skills, and then anticipate how you can address those skills in the lesson. How can you chunk things? How can you break it down? How can you have check-ins? So it sounds like it's a continual process, right? It's not just ever a one and done thing, which we know is, the case in education. And then that being said, like, you'll adjust as you go, and you have to remember you don't need to do everything. You don't need to grade everything. And I think kind of taking that pressure off of ourselves a little bit is the first step, and saying, like, anything I'm doing, if I'm aware of, like, how can I help my students, is going to be beneficial. I don't have to do everything. And then again, EB teachers, you've got Jay in your back pocket helping you out. Take advantage of those ideas. Like, they are gold. I mean, literally sentence stems that you can write on your board for a lesson, or vocabulary words with definitions that you can pull out of the text for your students. And I think, like Pat said at the beginning, even if you're not teaching in a special education setting, like, all of your students are going to benefit from these suggestions. So take advantage of that. So Jay, thank you so much for being here. Pat, I don't know if you want to share any other takeaways that I missed.
You are the takeaway queen. You mentioned all of them. I think the only thing I mentioned and I put on here is, depending on where you teach, we taught in a public school. So depending on where you teach, also remember you may have an ELL director, or special ed
Yes.
director, and you may have resources in your school or in your district. So see what resources you have. You may have technology at your fingertips that you don't even know about. So reach out to other teachers. In middle school, because you talk to your students, other teachers, talk to supervisors and directors. There's so many resources you may not even know about. So reach out for those resources too.
So
Yeah,
true. Brilliant.
I echo all of that. I had that written down. I skipped it. It was ELL. So, yeah, we had an amazing translator at our school, Pat. My goodness, and I was so fortunate to not yeah establish that working relationship. You get to understand the students at a much different level. Yes, I think it's so true. You don't necessarily know what you have until you dig for it. You see. Start to look for it. Her turn.
Yes, so true. Well, Jay, thank you again for joining us, for taking time out of your day, and thank you for all that you do for EB. We are truly blessed to have you on the team. So,
Well,
everybody,
I'm
have a great rest of your week.
trying to be. Bye.